Podcasting 2.0 for June 28th, 2024, episode 184, Donor Bone. Ho, ho, hey, hey, hello. It's time once again for Podcasting 2.0, and we're back on a Friday. Thanks for joining us on the last episode, which was Saturday. Everybody's here in the boardroom. We are ready to go. We are, of course, the only boardroom that won't talk about the debate last night. I'm Adam Curry here in the heart of the Texas Hill Country and in Alabama, the man who has 3 feet of pure thunderbolt for under 75 bucks. Ladies, say hello to my friend on the other end, the one and only Mr. Dave Jones.
No, you caught me right in the middle of taking my shoes off.
I wonder what that smell was. Oh, there it is. Yes.
All right, I'm good. I'm set now.
Hey, I'm Dave. Now, are you on summer schedule? Do you have to go back? Are you on lunchtime? You're good?
Oh, no,
you're good.
I'm free. I'm free.
You're free. Free. Yes. Beautiful.
I'm free of all time constraints.
It's been one of those days. You're not free of time constraints.
Yes.
No, I am. I was actually... Okay, let me work backwards. I was invited to appear on the Media Roundtable with Dan Granger.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which is a hi, Bubby. Oh, which is not on the roundtable, but the podcast. Yeah, but on the individual. Hi, Bubba. My dog just came back from the groomer. She's all nice. Smells nice.
Does she smell good?
Oh yeah. Toes are good. Hey, Fevers, good girl. And of course, you know, it's like the timing of that was difficult. There's time zones involved. I think he's in California. So we decided, he called me like a couple of weeks ago. I said, are you sure you want me on this podcast? And
seems like a terrible idea.
It was an intro from James, actually. I'm like, okay. And from James Creed, I'm like, you really want me on this podcast? Yeah, definitely. And Tina this morning was saying, does he know you?
Yeah. It's like, I feel like there's a, like, I feel like he thinks that you're Adam Carolla.
No, you know, he knew exactly who I was. Okay. And now we only had an hour, and I knew that this, you can't do anything in an hour. Like, cause I said, I got a show. I have a hard stop at 12. So of course, knowing that I would have to let it go to 12:15. We had a great conversation, and we have to do more episodes. Oh yeah. He's a radio guy. He comes from selling local radio spots. So we do have a lot of touch points, but it always is amazing to me how many people want to hear the story. Well, that's half your podcast. You know, it's like, well,
the story of podcasting,
the story of Adam Curry. It's like, Yeah. Which of course is riveting. I understand.
It is. I read it quite often. Yes.
And you know, I always try to give a different twist to it and everything. But he's got a very professional outfit, you know, people organizing it's all really good. But we do have to do more cause I barely scratched the surface of 2.0.
What was the overall, why did he want you on the show?
Well, because I have a differing opinion about the podcast industrial complex, but he made the mistake he says, well, it's unique. We're doing this today. Let's talk about the debate. I'm like,
that's hours and hours of time, 18 minutes,
you know, it's like, but it's okay. Actually didn't disagree much, but we're not going to talk about that here. Cause it's like, I don't want to talk
Thank
about
you.
That.
Thank
no,
you.
I don't want to talk no. about that. And of course this week has been interesting because Tuesday I had to go in for a bone graft to fix some stuff.
Some grill work. Yeah.
Yeah. That was kind of interesting. Have you ever had it where, cause you know, I'm friends with that periodontist and we are joking. We also fly together in his plane. We also joke around a lot. You know, and because, you know, he'll get the lidocaine in. He's like, I'm sorry. I said, you're not sorry. Stop saying that. It's a lie. It's fake news. So now he does it. Sorry. Not sorry.
Jabbing it in.
So, but I'm really good. I mean, I actually, it's strange to say it. I have fun when I go to these procedures. But then, you know, he's poking around because he had to take off a bridge and then, you know, get this, this donor bone in. And,
whoa, donor bone?
Oh yeah, no wait.
What is this?
Oh, no, I mean, I've had
all the other work I had done is it's they graft bone into onto your bone, and it's bone that's been donated. And this week there is a big sale on Hamas bone. So I'm sorry. Adam, I'm the worst. I know. I'm horrible.
Dan Granger regrets ever asking you to come on his show. What, number one, can donor bone be the name of the title? Can be the title of the show?
Yes, I think that's very good. Yes.
And when, I mean, and who donates these bones? Like, how do you donate a bone to somebody else's mouth?
Well,
I understand this at all.
So I do pray for these people because they're dead. They take the bone within 24 hours of someone dying and then, you know, put it on ice or whatever. And then there's a bone bank.
Yeah. Cotton gin said it's George Washington's teeth. Oh, it's the slave teeth.
Well, the previous bone we're convinced was Uyghur bone. So, you know, I now speak Mandarin and and Allahu Akbar. Whoa, it's working. What can I say?
This is the origin of these bones.
It's iffy.
Yes.
And who knows? You know, he may be trying to get me a deal, like getting something, you know, out of, that fell off the truck. I'm like, hey, let me get some cheap bone.
He's a bone shyster. Yeah.
So before he takes off this, you know, because then he has to drill to get to the screws. I mean, it's a very physical process, and it's actually
your
quite
mouth
interesting.
Is a complicated instrument.
It's
this point.
It's an erector set for sure. And if that's relevant to anyone these days, and then he's poking around, he's like, and he steps back, pulls down his mask, he says, "Dude." Now, whenever your periodontist does that, I'm like, what?
Now you're freaking out.
Yeah, he's like, well, it looks like we may have significant bone loss. It could have affected the canine. The implant may have failed. That's a 2% chance that an implant fails. He said the implant may have failed. We'll have to go through this whole process of taking that implant out, extracting the canine. We have to ossify bone for a couple months, wear a temporary, which means a whole time. I mean, I'm like, oh my God, do I really?
This is like starting over from scratch.
Well, it's a smaller piece, but yeah. And he says, and I said, well, what do you want to do? He said, well, baby steps. Let's get the bridge off and see how it looks. And then he takes off. He says, oh, now we're good. Thanks, bro.
What an a-hole.
He says, it's hard to tell. That's why I had to take it off. It's all good. Now, but then it was like an hour of, I mean, it's really physical. He's like digging around because he had to make a groove. I mean, I'll spare you the details. So it's just been an interesting week. To say the least. Interesting week.
I mean, how are you in pain? How's your mouth?
It only hurts when I laugh.
Yeah. Okay.
It actually does if I really laugh broadly, but it's not painful. And I would advise anyone to take care of your oral health because it has improved my life in so many ways. And I'm amazed at how much I can actually endure when it comes to pain.
You got hearing for free.
Got hearing for free. My allergies went away.
Longer in bed. Yeah, everything.
Oh, I don't know about that.
still, you're the sting of periodontal work at this point. Yeah.
No, there's still some work on that front. and so there we are. Anyway, so it's just, and so I ended late with him and I still had to find a song for today's show. And I actually wanted to clip something, which I didn't get to clip because there was this fantastic YouTube conversation, of a couple of, podcast. Now these are all, black podcasters and they're just going, I mean, the title of the YouTube is Everybody in Podcasting Be Broke. And
now I want to hear this.
Yes. Yeah, you know, it's 16 minutes, so I got to clip it down. I'll put it in the show notes. People can do that themselves. But it was an interesting conversation because they're basically talking about the big change. You know, ever since Spotify basically ejected from the industry, there's no more minimum guarantees. It's a real hustle. Everybody has to wait 90 to 120 days to get paid because you're getting paid last in the chain after the agency, and just what an incredible mess it is. And then YouTube, they finally gave me some real numbers.
Baller.
Thank you.
Sakala, 20 inch blades.
Is that the helipad trigger?
Yeah. Let's see how big that baller was. Woo! Booberry. Booberry. 169,691.
Whoa.
He says, Booberry.
He's in the room.
Booberry enters the chat. I'm so enthralled with the work put forward by the crew for the upcoming satellite skirmish. Lit in app Sunday, 4 p.m. Central. Stephen B. and Eric P.P. have transformed the split kit into something really magical. Please check it out at liveislit.com. That's an ad. It's an ad.
That's the way ads are supposed to work.
Sam Sethi puts in 100 sats and says, sadly, I can't hear this live show on True Fans Podverse or Fountain. Well, I don't know. That doesn't seem to be. Well, haven't heard any more reports of that.
So, I don't hear. Yeah.
I hope it works out. Anyway, back to what was I saying? I got interrupted.
Ooh, Live is Lit is looking good.
Oh, no, that's looking pretty. Real good. That's looking real good. What was it? What was I? Anyway, yapping on about stuff, whatever it is.
You finally got good YouTube numbers.
Yeah. So it's $1 per 600 views, which I think works out to about $1.40 CPM.
Are you kidding? Mm-hmm. That is horrible.
And
Is it a sliding CPM based on other criteria, or is that just pretty much standard payout for everyone?
Oh, hold on a second, Dave. I see the problem.
Oh, you got
it. Yeah. Remember we used the different stream on Saturday.
Oh, because we were interrupting somebody. Yeah, is that other stream still in the
enclosure? Let me see. Okay, that makes sense. Let me see. Let me just make sure this is the right stream. Yeah, that's the right one. Sorry about that. Okay, maybe if someone can let Sam know. Luckily, it's only a handful of people who listen to this.
Sure.
It was just really interesting to see that, you know, that. They were really hustling, but all the money was now YouTube money. Even though they have 1 million downloads audio for the same podcast, they can't make any money off of it. The whole thing is just, it was very eye-opening. Very eye-opening.
So what did you say the CPM was on that? Like $1.40?
For YouTube, yeah. I mean, if it's $1 per 600 views, 1,000 views would be about $1.40. $1.40?
Yeah.
Okay. Am I saying that right? More or less?
So if you had 1 million views, 50. Let's see. And then you.
And then, of course, that has to be qualified, you know, qualified views. And the whole, it's just a mess. And then
So 1 million views gets you roughly $1,400.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not life-changing money.
Well, you got to be pretty big to get 1 million views. But back to Dan Granger, you know, I did get to the point with him. It's like the one thing no one ever talks about. What are these podcasts about? We all talk about brand safe, not brand safe, you know, but what are they about? Who are they serving? You know, you've got to, you just do a podcast, and make money. Good luck. Do you have something to say? Do you have an audience that you want to speak to, that you want to reach? If it's just entertainment stuff, okay, good luck. You know, that's what I love about this podcast. This podcast is literally for the people in the 2.0 community and others who are interested in it. And it's not even a podcast. It's a board meeting. Hello. Medium equals board meeting.
I was reading... There's a lot of stuff about paywalls this week. I want to ask our guest about that though. But I mean, I think, you know, one of the things I read, I think let's just speak generally here. This economy is teetering on the edge.
Big time.
I mean, like
big time. And you see it close up, right? In your business, are there indicators for you?
Well, yeah, but you know, it's more like, the story about Walgreens this week, you know, Walgreens is closing up to 25% of its stores. And I don't know if you saw this, but, you know, what they cited was the CEO said consumers are, quote, stunned at prices right now.
I believe it. Yeah.
Yeah, it says Walgreens is planning to close about 25% of its 8,700 stores cut its profit outlook for the year, citing worse than expected consumer spending. He said, quote, "We witness continued pressure on the U.S. consumer. Our customers have become increasingly selective and price sensitive in their purchases."
Yeah.
I mean, the one thing that I had been reading about the other day is that, you know, retail spending is reported as just the year over year numbers. They're like, okay, well, this is disappointing because retail spending is only up 3% quarter over quarter or whatever, but that's never inflation adjusted.
No.
So if you look at the inflation adjusted retail spending, it's down huge. It's down huge.
Yeah.
Like it's basically been flat for about 3 years. And before that it was down. This economy is way worse than is known in the, if you just read headlines. And I'm afraid that, you know, of course you're not going to be able to do the payouts that you used to be if you're somebody like YouTube or if you're any of these sort of siloed closed systems or advertising based systems. You just can't. You can't do that because the spending is not there. This economy is really weak. In ways that we don't understand because it's being,
well, we're being gaslit. We're being gaslit. Hey, it's great. Bidenomics works. It's all fantastic. But I see it. I do. I go to the grocery store. I shop. I say, like, yeah. What? You can't get out of there for under $100. And you look in your basket, like, what did I actually buy?
Yeah, nothing. It's in a, you get one grocery bag and it's like, yeah, $80. It's insane. So I think that this all fits together because those CPMs, if you look at, you can look at across this the same way with CPMs and podcasting advertising. This is not adjusting for inflation. That $22 CPM or $23 CPM that was paying out 5 years ago, it's still at $22 or $23. Mm. You're losing money every year. You're losing money every month. You know, if you're getting, cause we always hear of these podcast CPMs in the $20 to $25 range, depending on the show.
Yeah. It's really down 30% adjusted for inflation. Yeah.
Cause that number has not moved.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then now your downloads are down because of the Apple podcast finally being accurate.
iOS 17 apocalypse. Yes.
Yeah.
Hey, by the way, everybody, if you're listening to Apple Podcasts, go into your menu there and select automatic downloads and select last 10 episodes. You'd really help us out.
Hit the three dots.
Hit the three dots. That's right. You'd really help us out. Yeah. We're not defrauding the advertiser at all. No.
But any of these numbers that stay static like this, you're losing money. This is all bad. I mean, look, so, I mean, my son, he's got two jobs. My daughter has two jobs because they have to, because they have
life. They have life.
Yes. They have a restaurant job, which pays tips, which helps them make ends meet. But their primary job is, you know, they're still making like $14 an hour.
Yeah.
You can't live on $14 an hour. That is an unsustainable wage.
No, the only people who are making $30 an hour are government jobs. Surprise, surprise.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and people at Bucky's.
Bucky's is doing well. There were a lot of... So along with that comes the fake stock market, which, of course, is also up because it's adjusted for inflation. Hello. This is exactly how, why are the prices of stocks up? Because they're being adjusted and it doesn't go. What are we drinking?
Oh, this is a liquid death mango chainsaw.
It's going to give you a stroke.
it's an impressive name.
that's what the word, all these strokes and heart attacks is from energy drinks, of course.
No, this is pure. This is only sparkling. This is flavored water, zero calories.
Yeah, but it has death on the label, Dave Jones. What are you thinking? It has death on
that's
the just label.
That makes you want to buy it. It's like the Surgeon General's
liquid. Oh, yeah, it's exactly. Like, you could have these lungs if you smoke these cigarettes. I think I will buy some. Yes.
Yeah.
That's been proven to work, actually. The stock market, of course, really being propped up, or certainly the S&P 500, by NVIDIA and the exorbitant spending still on AI, which has just been...
That is going to crash so hard.
Well, it's interesting because I came across an article in Ars Technica. I talked about it on No Agenda yesterday. And it turns out that Brian of London did his PhD thesis on this very thing, which is, and so he's going to look at it for me and tell me if it's full of crap or not. Here's the headline. Ars Technica, I think they have pretty interesting articles. I think they usually spot on with a lot of stuff. Researchers upend AI status quo by eliminating matrix multiplication in LLMs. Running AI models without floating point matrix math could mean far less power consumption. And so the highlight here, in a new paper titled Scalable Matmul-Free Language Modeling, researchers describe creating a custom 2.7 billion parameter model without using Matmul, which is the matrix multiplication, that features similar performance to conventional large language models. They also demonstrate running a 1.3 billion parameter model at 23.8 tokens per second on a GPU that was accelerated by a custom programmed FPGA chip that only uses 13 watts of power. That's a lot less than this NVIDIA stuff.
Dovidas says, I know the guy who wrote that paper.
And? And? So, well, Brian of London knows this stuff. And if this is true, this could upend NVIDIA's high perch very quickly.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And that would be a fun...
This is from NVIDIA's documentation, Matrix Multiplication Background User Guide. General matrix multiplications are a fundamental building block for many operations in neural networks. They have a whole document on matrix multiplication in NVIDIA's documentation.
And that Brian of London did his thesis on this. This is pretty surprising. Oh. That guy never ceases to amaze me. Very interesting.
That could be bad.
Well, it could be interesting.
Because I mean, NVIDIA is, I mean, they're half the market now. Nobody else is going up.
Nope. Do we want to talk at all about what we've been working on behind the scenes, or do you feel it's too early?
I mean, we can. I mean, we can demo it real quick if anybody wants to play along.
Okay. We'll bring in our guests midway because they can probably weigh in on this. I think it'll be of interest to them. These rock and roll boys. So I'm going to be honest, and I think I speak on behalf of you, Dave. Saturday's podcast board meeting was kind of a gut punch when it comes to Albie's understandable switch away from providing custodial wallets, whereas right now we're kind of in this frozen state of you can't, in the United States, which arguably is a market that's important, we can't create new custodial wallets for value-for-value payments. Mm. And as much as I, and this, of course, was flagged a while ago by the Costello Institute, Jim Julian Ainsley, the Costello Institute, who, they're like, well, this is not working. You know, we can't be onboarding musicians by giving them an hour long onboarding session, orange pilling them, and then telling them they need to, fund a channel on their node. I mean, this is a non-starter. Right. And I understand. And I also understand why Albie has to move this way. And from a larger perspective, stepping back, it's kind of the whole Lightning Network concept falls apart a bit on this idea of custodial can't be done.
Yeah.
Even for Noster Zaps, if you think about it, I mean, all that stuff is Wallet of Satoshi. Or whatever. Mm. It's all custodial wallets, except for, a few exceptions, and Zeus is there, and the Breeze wallet, and there are others. But everyone else is kind of either pulled out of the market or seeing some writing on the wall and saying, well, you know, it doesn't look, it looks like we're all money transmitters now. So we kind of, you know, the only outfit that has both sides in a way is Fountain, because they have Zebedee on the back end, which has the money transmitter licenses.
Right.
So they can.
Well, I mean, Roy told us this. There's so many things we're going. There's so many parts to this all at the same time. Because, I mean, Roy told us this a year ago, that everybody's just sort of like doing this and not really, and just sort of hoping to stay under the radar.
Right.
Because it's never really been tested in any legal sense about money transmission. If you're hosting custodial wallets. Mm-hmm. And it's understandable that, you know, organizations like Albi and, I mean, Tim at LM Pay, he said the same thing. He's like, this is too risky. I don't think he didn't think he's doing anything wrong, but the regulations are just so unclear.
And not even just the regulations, just the whole managing a massive node with all these accounts. And, you know, when you have accounts, there's all kinds of issues, and I get it. I totally understand. For sure. But, mm-hmm. The hope that we had placed a lot of our bets on was this LSP model, which also kind of got rug pulled, because what came back is, well, it really doesn't make sense for micropayments to have an LSP, because there's no ROI on opening up the channels for these little bitty bits you guys are sending back and forth. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Well, that wasn't made clear.
That's a good point. So the Lightning ecosystem was promised from the beginning to be the solution to on-chain difficulties. And it was very much positioned as the way that people could like do things like pay for your coffee and this kind of stuff. And so the idea there is that these were ways for crypto to be, or for Bitcoin to be spent by the average person, you know. But then if you don't, but I think we took that to mean, that you can be sovereign in this way.
Yeah.
And that's not entirely accurate. You technically can be, but
But it's not for the every average day guy. It's not an app you install on your phone. I mean, and God bless Chad F, man. He's out there. This is a Dr. Pepper, baby, from Waco, Texas.
Okay. The original.
Yeah. OG. God bless Chad F for, you know, being on the cutting edge of Zeus and their Olympus LSP, but it's, mm-hmm. you know, it's still got to run in the background on your phone the minute that disconnects. And of course we chose Keysend for a whole bunch of reasons, mainly because, you run into the same issues with LNURL. I mean, you still have to have a custodial solution somewhere doing something. You know, it's not like you just have a wallet and I'm good to go. You know, yeah, you've got stuff that is working, but in the background, it's all the same problem.
Yeah, what we've seen, what we were told was that Lightning was going to fix all of that. But what we've seen, what's actually happened is Lightning has evolved into a way to move funds between institutional wallets. Is a way, it's the glue that makes things easier for the large players.
Yes.
I mean, if you have a
Zebedee, a Zebedee can actually provide that type of service. But they don't do it free. You know, you can't become a Zebedee partner and just say, "Hey, look, I got free wallets." No.
So you know that it's going to be that Lightning is going to serve a role, but Lightning is going to serve the purpose of decoupling fund transmission from the chain for larger institutions. Like, you know, you're going to have a Cash App wallet, and now you can move Bitcoin from one place to another
You can move it to Strike or something else. Yes, exactly.
And that's what's going to happen. Or you're point of sale providers like Breeze does that, Square, you know, they're all going to link together with Lightning, and that's going to be fine. But for our purposes, it's just a humongous barrier, because if you have to be a money transmitter,
yeah. So Chad F says in the chat, he says you can connect the Zeus LSP to a node. That's what I did. 5 million sats inbound for $20. That's not going to work. I mean, this is my point. And the Albi guys, they're correct. Like, hey, everybody needs one of these. Everybody needs their own wallet. It's a node in the cloud. Sure. But it's a non-starter the minute you have to pay for it. No one's going to do it. Even having the knowledge of a channel, and no one wants that. That's just marketing wise, that will not work. It's hard enough to explain Satoshis, let alone all this other stuff. So you got to,
with all that in the background, you started looking into
Fedomance,
right?
No. I did what I always do. I got on my knees and fought like a man in prayer, Dave Jones.
Okay.
And then it came to me.
And then what happened?
God gave me a solution, I think.
Okay.
And introduced me. It really happens this way. Like, all of a sudden, bing, there pops a message like, check this out. And it's this concept called eCash. And I'm going to try and explain this. It is the equivalent of a gift card, where you create a gift card of any amount, and you can then hand that to somebody else. You could physically hand it to them on a QR code. You could send this string of payment information to them on through email. You could send it through ham radio, which is actually how we found out about it, believe it or not, that people are using this with ham radio. And the actual settlement of said gift card happens on the node that it was created. And I like this because you can use multiple funding sources. eCash, by the way, was mentioned in the Satoshi white paper. It's a concept that's been around for decades. It never really caught on. And a couple of guys decided to build this on top of Bitcoin, specifically Lightning, but you could also use it with fiat, with dollars, and which is interesting and should be looked at, and we'll get to that. But right now we have an implementation based on the Lightning network. And what is most interesting about it is that a funding source can be offered through the Strike API. Now you can also use your own Lightning node, so you can still use this solution in a sovereign way. But you can also use it with a Strike wallet. And why is that interesting? Because Strike is a money transmitter, and they have all the licenses to facilitate people to send and receive via their system. Mm-hmm. So we have a reference implementation that we've put together. It's called a Mint. And what you do is you fund your eCash wallet, and the eCash wallet is literally JavaScript. So you can spin up a million wallets, as many as you want. It doesn't make any difference. It looks just like a Lightning wallet. And you say, okay, I want some money in this. You fund it by sending a Lightning payment, just a regular Lightning payment to the Mint. And then that money shows up right away in your eCash wallet in Satoshis. You could, again, it could be dollars, euros, whatever. In fact, they even have a dollar and euro implementation.
Hey, let me hit pause on you for a second. I need to just insert here that this is a very hard thing to explain to people.
Totally. It took me 2 days to get to explain it to you.
Yes. It is very difficult to explain. When you first start seeing this thing and trying to explain it, it sounds, the eyes glaze over, and the person you're talking to is like, this is not better, this is worse. But if you just hang in there, it actually is easier. Like, so, you just got to hang with it for a minute.
So from a high level, you have a wallet. You fund it with a Lightning payment. You can do that from any app. You can fund it. You could fund it from Strike, from Cash App. It's a regular old lightning payment, no key send, nothing special. That's how you fund it. You see that, forget what happens on the back end. You see that in your app, your wallet, and you can pay someone. And the way you pay someone is you say, here's the amount, pay someone, and it gives you a string. And that string literally can be given to someone. They put it into their wallet. They say receive, and they receive right into their wallet. So that means you can send that through any transmission protocol you want. The beauty on the back end is it never actually leaves the funding source. It's all there. Right. So you're actually creating a gift card. Someone's taking it. And then when they redeem it, they're going back to what's called the mint, and they redeem it there, and they can send it out to wherever they want. That's how simple it is. And the beauty is no fees. You have fees getting it in and out, you know, regular lightning fees, but you send one Satoshi, the person gets one Satoshi, and there's no fee in between. It's a very, and it's immediate. It's like, it's just, it's fast.
So I just put a link to a wallet. This is the wallet.cashew.me service. It's just a demo wallet that they use. It makes more sense when you do it.
Yeah.
So the wallet is just basically, it's just some JavaScript. It's stored in your browser, local storage. You get some seed phrases to recover the wallet if you ever lose it. Standard wallet-y type stuff. And then what happens is you can link your wallet to multiple mints. And for testing purposes, we created a mint.
You want to post that in the chat?
I'm gonna do one better. I'm gonna post a voucher.
Oh, only one person's gonna get it.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So
whoever uses that voucher first wins. Whoa! Yes. Oh boy! I'm itching to do it. Let's see.
You have to decode it.
Oh, you're sending more than one. You're doing multiple vouchers.
No. This is I tried to just do one, but we'll see how that works.
Somehow we got three in the chat.
Okay. Well, I'll. Maybe I should post it on podcastindex.social.
Well, whoever paste that into the receive box on the Cashew wallet will get the Satoshis.
Yes. Yeah. So the.
Oh, that's all one. Oh, I see.
It broke it up.
Oh, it split it up. Okay.
That's Chad. You're saying too many steps, but this is what I'm saying. Hang in there. It's more. It's not as bad as it sounds, because the issue here is that the issue, you have to think about this as if it's a podcast app.
Yeah.
The podcast app spins up a wallet just like you're going to this page, and the person who's wanting to fund that wallet just sends some funds to it from a source that they already own, like Cash App, Strike, whatever. You already have some Bitcoin somewhere. So this simplifies the onboarding process.
Sure does.
Because you already have some funds in a trusted wallet that you are controlling. So then you send some of those funds over to the wallet that's tied to the mint. And so that wallet can be spun up by any app, and the app doesn't have to have custodianship over anything. The custodianship is at the mint. So then when the payment happens, it's just an eCash voucher for the tokenized Satoshis. And that just trades back and forth instantaneously. It's all offline transactions. Then when somebody wants to take their money out, the podcaster, they just transfer it in a lightning payment back out to their wallet, Cash App, whatever, Strike. It's sort of like thing, you know, funds go in, they get tokenized and go into the system, i.e. the mint, and then they come out on the other end back into whatever funding, you know, wallet wants to happen.
So the people get stuck at the mint. So again, just from a high level, and then I want you to go back down, Dave. From a high level, you open your podcast app, there's a wallet. That wallet is connected to, really connected to nothing. You don't have to know, and you don't have to know anything. And it says, would you like to fund the wallet? Yes. How many sats do you want to put in? And you, so you send sats to, and it can even be an LN URL address. So it can be Adam at podcastindex.social, actually, theoretically. Mm-hmm. And so you send that from Cash App, from Strike, from your wallet of Satoshi, you send it from Fountain, whatever it is, you send it in. From that moment on, you're good to go. There's no step three. Then you're just boosting and sending sats as you normally would. On the receiving side, the podcaster has a wallet and they get all these receives like boom, boom, boom. And then when they want to do something with that, they take it out of their wallet by sending a simple lightning payment somewhere back to Cash App, back to Strike, back to Fountain, wherever you want to have it. And that's it. And the beauty is the custodianship can be completely sovereign on your own. So someone can be a funder of that and be a node. You could even do everything from your own node. But the reason why it's a solution in this at this moment in time is because it's all running through Strike and we're getting a business account. So, and I think that this is something that hosting companies should have their own account that they're using to fund a mint for their podcasters. Is, you know, there's no reason why podcast apps wouldn't consider doing that, but we're happy to start it because all the money transmitting is actually being done through Strike. That's the beauty. They have the transmitter licenses. Now, does that mean it works in Australia? I'm not sure. Is Strike in Australia? I don't know.
Yeah, well, but this doesn't matter, though, because the mint, it's just the back.
Right, so you're right.
The mint is tied to the mint can be funded from any. It just needs a place to store the funds.
Right.
And that can be either your own Lightning node. It can be a Strike wallet. It can be an LN Bit server. It can be many, many things on the back end. Yeah. It does not matter.
Yeah.
Because what happens is when the funding goes in, you spin up a wallet on the mint. And when you transfer some funds into the mint, it just all goes into a number on the back.
Yeah.
You know, and this is part of it because the custodianship, you know, it can mean two things. It can mean you just possess the ability to, you just possess control over the total balance, mm-hmm. or you possess control over individual accounts. And the thing is, like right now, this is tied to my Strike account. This mint is being funded by my Strike account.
That's where the trust part comes in.
Right. So all I see is a number. I have no, if 10 people made wallets on this and put stuff in there, I would have no idea who that, I have no way of knowing. That's the Xiaomi and eCash protocol.
Yeah.
Is that everything's encrypted. I have no idea whose money belongs to who, anything. It's just a big block.
Let me explain. Eric PP, no. No. You only need one mint.
Yes.
Not everybody has to have a mint. That's just trust. Who do you trust to be your mint?
That's what makes it fee free is because it's just moving numbers in a database. You know, like now I give you, like this, you know, I send you a voucher, which I did in the IRC channel. I send a voucher for 100 Satoshis to you on the mint. Well, as long as you add that mint to your wallet, you just get it. It's just there because the funds, it's a promise for the redemption of funds.
So Eric PP, if you only trust yourself, then yes, you can use your own mint. That's the beauty of it. We all trusted Albie. That worked great until Albie, it's not that we don't trust them, but they change the rules. So you still have to, if it's custodial, you still have to trust someone. So you are more than welcome to run your own mint. It's actually quite simple. And you just run it as a part of your node that you already have.
Look, there's a lot of stuff to work out to see if this is going to work. To, you know, there's a lot of stuff here.
But the beauty of it is that you don't have to go. You don't have to have a whole LN URL type solution. You're just sending a number, which is what Dave just did in the chat. So you can transmit right. that. I mean, you can transmit it through any type of protocol.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty good, Sir Spencer. It catches a step between being noted up and a custodial lightning. Yeah, I would say that's true.
That's a good way of describing it. And yeah. So,
I mean, the way that I would envision, if we can get something like this to work, the way that I would envision it working is as a trust.
Yeah.
The podcasting community and stakeholders within the podcasting community, us, hosting companies, podcast apps, anybody who can should be a part of owning the Mint, so that we don't have to put all of our trust in one person. There's a podcast Mint, and everybody, you know, and it's held in trust by many different people who have a stake in the game. And that ensures trustworthiness. And then when everything goes into that Mint and everything comes out of that Mint, there's no fees. There's none of these problems. That's the way I envision it working.
Now, the only thing I'd say, I have a different vision, because that's very difficult to do, although this group could actually do it. It may also be just a good idea to have multiple Mints. It's transparent. The adding of a Mint is can be automatic. And right. I think a lot of people would trust their app. People would trust their hosting company, or people may trust us. And you can choose, or you can trust yourself. I think multiple Mints is not a bad idea.
It's not. I feel like I don't want to get too stuck on it, but it just seems like, seeing that there has to be a trust factor, the more people involved in a single Mint is the higher, it just raises the trust level.
Agreed.
Everybody's looking at, you know, cause everybody's watching everybody else's back. We could run a Mint, but then people have to trust us. And
I mean, oh, I what a stupid do. Idea.
People do trust us. But it's almost too much. I don't want to expect that out of people. You know, I'd rather have somebody, a few other people that are involved who are saying, you know, yes, everything is on the up and up, and nobody's going to run off with all this money to Mexico or whatever. It's just that kind of thing. When you're asking for trust, I feel like, you know, it's trust, but verify. It's the verification part is when other people are involved. But anyway, this like lots of work to do. This is just a test. I don't know if anybody redeemed. Did anybody redeem that?
I think someone said it was 184 sats. Was that right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Someone got it.
Oh, yep. They did. Yep. Somebody got it. I just see it. It left my wallet.
So
I have no idea who it was. It's just all blind. It's all because of encryption. It's all blinded. All I see is just an outgoing transaction.
Chad F, you fund the Mint by putting money into your wallet. Yep. That's literally how it. So you put 1,000 sats into your wallet. You've just funded the Mint for 1,000 sats. When someone redeems that, they get 1,000 sats in their eCash wallet. When they want to send it somewhere else, there may be a lightning fee if they send it out. But then that's how it leaves. So
yeah. So if your wallet is tied to our Mint and you transfer 1,000 sats in, the balance in my Strike wallet, because it's tied as the back-end funding source, is going to go up by 1,000 sats. But I don't know that that's you, because I had, there's no, the because of the encryption, is all blinded and I don't know what's what.
No, Chad.
I just see the numbers going up and down.
So Chad F, no, the Mint, yes, the Mint of course needs liquidity. That's why it can be a node or it can be Strike. Strike has liquidity. Your own node would have liquidity. But
it gets its liquidity from the back-end funding source.
Yeah. But the actual sending back and forth requires no liquidity, because you're talking to this. It's centralized. You're talking to the same server. which is why I like multiple mints, because it all shows up in your eCash wallet as just one amount.
The downside of multiple mints is you have to do a mint swap, which involves a Lightning transaction. So there's just more likelihood for something to fail.
Do you have to do that?
Disadvantage. Yeah, the mint swap is a Lightning transaction, right?
If you want to send it out.
Yeah, so if the listener is on one mint and the podcaster is on a destination wallet's on a different mint, then you'd have to do a mint swap.
Right. Well, I think the idea is the payer, i.e. the listener, uses a mint, and that mint is then automatically added to the podcaster side. I understand the issue of having multiple mints being a little more complicated in redeeming to send it out, but it's not something that can't be overcome.
Okay.
Don't you think?
Well, I don't know. It's so early days. That's tested.
Yeah. But the main thing is what transport. So I'm already okay, that part I see. The wallet part is great because any podcast app can just throw in some JavaScript. Here it is. You know, you're good to go. Literally, it's all open source. Here it is. The transport protocol is what is interesting to me. What do we use to send the tokens from the listener to the podcaster? Because that was always through the Lightning Network. And now there's a lot of very robust systems. So that's the next question, is what do we use that makes it easy for even apps like Castomatic to send this payment with payment information? Thank God we'll be rid of the TLV record kludge, because we'll have more room, more space, you know, options.
Well, I don't know. We'll just have to see. I mean, people need to, you know, people who are so inclined need to just play with it. Let's just all, and I'm going to keep that mint running. Please don't, you know, depend on it, because this is all very experimental. Don't put important, you know, sats in there that you're not willing to lose. But you feel free to use it for testing. I'm going to leave it up and running while I'm doing testing. So, but just play with it. I mean, you can literally spin up a Cashew wallet. I mean, with a little bit of JavaScript, it's not a big deal.
Yeah, or just go to cashew.me and you've got a wallet right there. Boom.
Yeah, exactly.
You're done. You can play with it right away.
So you could stick that in a progressive web app podcast player and have all kinds of fun.
Yeah, that's another big benefit. I mean, and then we'll bring in our guests. I'm just so, in the back of my mind, I keep hearing ActivityPub. I don't know why.
But for the payment. For the payment
transport. Yeah,
for transport. Yeah, I mean it is a very reasonable next place to go, I think.
And it's a huge pair of scissors.
Oh, it's humongous. Yeah,
it's head shears, actually. All right, absolutely. They've waited long enough. They've waited patiently. We are very happy to have them here for the third time in the boardroom. Please say hello from RSS.com to Ben Richardson and Alberto Batella.
Hey, everybody.
Hello.
Hello. Hello. Hello. Hello, gentlemen. Any initial responses to what you just heard?
Nope.
I mean, it's complex, I have to say. I was concerned when I listened to the interview of the guys at Albi in the previous episode, because I was thinking about our company, and we launched Value for Value for all our podcasters exactly 2 years ago, July 2022. Precisely because Albi was simplifying the process and dealing with the complexity in the backend. But now it's disheartening almost, seeing that the regulators are slowing down progress. And when I heard you, Adam, offering to pre-fill the wallet, to host wallets, I thought it was a great gesture, but I also thought this removes the unique value proposition of a company like Albi. Imagine they go to get VCs or to get a convertible note, and they say, okay, but the wallet are filled by the guys at Podcast Index, right? Mm. So it's kind of, it's a bit of a catch-22. It's complex.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, the thing that we have to figure out, you know, that was a lot of complexity there to explain.
Yeah.
But it's not, this other way of doing things is, I think if there's two questions, if it works well and people can code to it, and I think that's very possible. And the other question is can it be that we have a back-end funding source at a regulated entity that will play ball with us? If that's the case, you know, because the idea here is to have, you know, a mint for podcasting. You know, people have been saying the whole time, okay, you should have like a podcast token, you know, a podcast coin or whatever, this kind of thing.
That's exactly what this is.
And nobody wants that, but this sort of is that thing. So you have, you know, if you have a mint, this sort of a trustee of the funds, in a tokenized way, it's a token. It's a bearer instrument is what it is.
Yeah. It's like having a dollar bill.
Yeah. And so you have this, things go into this trusted mint. And if there's a regulated entity on the back that said this, that like Strike, if we are able to, we're going to work on opening a business account with them and explaining to them what we intend to do, you know, be perfectly honest, here's what we would like to do. We would like to have, you know, a mint, and this would be the funding source for it. If they're willing to do that, to me, that solves many, many problems. Because everybody now is just, it's just instantaneous transactions. There's none of the complexity that we have to deal with right now.
What was really interesting in my onboarding experience to this, you had the mint set up. I had a Strike account, but I'd never done anything with it. So I hooked it up to my bank account, just like you do with Venmo. And I sent $5. I literally sent $5. I didn't send, you know, 20,000 sats. I just sent $5, and it showed up as $5 in my eCash wallet.
Yeah, that's the other thing is this is a eCash is a tokenizing it tokenizes any asset. So it can tokenize Bitcoin, USD, it anything you can send it into it, that it will create a bearer voucher for that thing. What goes in is what comes out.
And that was really pleasurable, because it's like, oh, $5, I get it. It wasn't right. Satoshis, you know, et cetera. In fact, Strike shows that it's $5. You've got to physically tap it to make it turn into sats.
Yeah. So, maybe if we could get something like this to work, I think it would simplify it for everybody, honestly.
Yeah.
I think everybody, it would make something like what you did with Alberto, it would make it like child's play. Instead of having to integrate with their API and this kind of thing, it would really remove all that complexity from the coding aspect. But I don't know. We'll have to see.
We're pushing. We're just pushing and running with scissors. We're trying to make something happen.
Yeah.
I like the idea of vouchers that you discussed just before, meaning if I think of ways to postpone the issue, for example, tax or compliance, a voucher is like phantom shares, right? It's an alternative approach. It could be, it's based on trust, but as you said before, you trust also whoever holds the keys to your custodial wallet. So that could be also an option. I don't know exactly how it would play out, but a promise, a voucher, you know, that could help.
And what's also nice about it is you don't have to have something that's online. You just receive this voucher, and you can redeem it whenever you feel. There's no time limit.
Yeah. Now I'm overthinking, but this could be an NFT, for example, or similar principle. You know, a smart contract where you have I'm saying there is a smart contract that regulates this promise, and you can do something with what you have. You can sell it. You can just cash it in. this resonates to me as a possible use of smart contracts.
I didn't think about it because the cashew voucher is. I mean, it's fungible, so you could pass it along to somebody else. You wouldn't even care. Yeah, you didn't have to keep it necessarily. That's interesting. I never thought about that. That's pretty cool. So what, you know, you guys have been busy.
Yeah, I was going to say, now let's talk about you guys.
Y'all have been busy. That's why I wanted to have you on the show, is because y'all have been doing a whole bunch. And, I mean, I guess number one is, on the list is the lit, you know, live item tag. Y'all put that in earlier this year. And I just want you to, I mean, can you just tell me how it's going? I mean, you're having live podcasters do live very often. How popular is that?
Okay, so I looked at the stats before hopping into this episode, and we had only in a month only 30 episodes. But my sense is that most of them were tests. So I have to be honest there, and this means we need to educate more podcasters. So I guess the release per se made it simple, created a simple interface to start a live episode, but it takes also a lot of educations for podcasters to you know, to be able to really leverage this new way of podcasting, if you want, which is actually back to the old radio. It's live. You can interact. It's exciting. I think we have to work on that.
When you spin up a live stream for someone for a lit episode, does that include a chat mechanism, or is that something that people have to bring themselves?
Not yet. It doesn't include a chat mechanism. We thought about the end-to-end process, and as usual, when we have to decide how to roll out a feature, we split it into milestones or deliverables. So we did the minimum viable implementation now, where it's very easy to start the episode, to schedule, start and end, but nothing else. And we thought, when we see a bit of uptake, we are going to invest more time. So not yet.
Because just as someone who's been live streaming while recording for, we've been doing it for 15 years, I think, the chat is such a necessary component. I understand what you're saying about the rollout. It's just that that's what really brings it alive. If you look at No Agenda Stream, that's now a 24-hour stream. People pop in, they grab control of the stream. The bat signal goes out through Podping. People know to open up their app to check in. Boom, they're in a chat, and you know, then all it really comes alive when you have the boost bot and all these things happening in there. It's really an essential component, I feel.
Yeah.
I mean, we see that even here today, right? I mean, you guys were looking at the chat as you talked about all these different implementations, and certainly it added a little bit more interest to me as I was about falling asleep out of my chair.
Oh, please.
You guys cracking new
so
ones.
Blasé. All right, Ben. Oh. Sorry. Hey, Bernie, but, Texas, seriously. Quiet down south there.
Yeah, seriously. We hear you, Adam, and you know, there you have the benefit of not only the years of experience, but you do see ahead. I mean, I think you're probably 10 years ahead of everybody else in many aspects.
That's why I'm poor. Everybody else runs off with the great ideas after 10 years and makes a billion.
Oh, trust me. I've got like 3 notes here already on how we're going to make tons of money off of your ideas in about 8 years. So
8 years. Yeah, you put a reminder on your phone. Yeah. Remind me in 2032. Yeah.
We just filed the patent right now, real time.
Yeah,
real time
patent filing.
Yeah, I feel like the testing part is good though, because when people do it, they realize it's not as scary maybe as they think.
Yeah,
because I was scared to do a live show until Adam, you know, he brought it up, and it's really not that bad. I mean, it's you learn not to, after you do it a couple of times, you learn not to be nervous about making mistakes.
Let's recall the history of podcasting. The reason okay, so here's what happened. I come from radio. You walk into the studio. It's top of the hour. Gonna go. Boom. All right. You start, you go, you roll, you broadcast. With podcasting, we did not have the equipment, the processing, we had musicians' mixers. That's pretty much all that we had. So it was very complicated. You know, back in the day, before everyone knew how to do a mix minus, we did the magical double ender. So I'm going to talk to you. And I think it was maybe Skype in the beginning, and the quality was so bad that everyone would record each on their own side, and then you'd meld those two together. Then we created a whole industry where people record, and then we have like these, Phil Spector wall of sound people. It's a whole new category come in, and they're the podcast editor. And then of course, from that, we got people chopping out the errs and the ums and the stutters and editing. And for my money, completely taking the life out of a podcast, but it was really a technical reason that we were all doing post-production. And now there's enough gear out there that everybody can do live production. So it's really just a mindset, but also when you bring the listening audience in, and it's always just a studio audience, it's always a subset, but it really brings energy into every podcast. It's amazing how much energy it brings in.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. What are you doing, if you can reveal anything about it? I mean, are you spinning up sort of live Icecast type servers or on demand? How are you making that work?
Okay, so that's also possibly the current friction we are having in terms of usage. We are not dealing with that part yet. We are not. So you have to find your own. You have to have your own server. So the interface makes it super easy. You just click go on air, but you have to schedule this live episode. You have to paste the URL of the RTMP server.
Okay. So you're saying that might be some of the resistance, maybe because it requires that extra step.
Yes, but we thought about that. We thought about a chat, and really the issue is that possibly is a brand new product. Really, you would want for this to take off and to be used massively, a one-stop shop, a product where you can even record video. So you have video, you have the streaming server, and you have everything behind the scenes, and you just click a button and you go on air. That's why when we had to decide whether to launch a good, decent support for Lit in our UI, or really launch the one-stop shop in 1 year from now, we thought we would launch something smaller but sooner to start, you know, educating and giving awareness, providing this tool for everyone. I have to say we were courageous in our UI, in our opinion, because, you know, we have one big orange button in our dashboard which said until recently new episode. Now it's just called new. When you click, you have episode or live episode. So that was our attempt to educate users that now see live episode as one of the two options. And it's a big choice for us. We never touch this very important part of our funnels. So yeah, we have a long way to go, but we are much better placed than other hosting companies that do not offer this kind of support or don't make the UI easy. So for us, it's a test of product market fit in the short term, and still we are going to keep building.
How are you marketing this? How can we assist? How can we help with that? How can we help people see what this is?
Well, the way we market all our features, usually we tend to create content, obviously, in our blog and knowledge base. In our knowledge base, we have, for instance, a very detailed but simple how-to that includes spinning up a server with a service that offers 1 hour for free. Really, when we see people really understanding the feature is when we offer workshops. And I'm not saying you, Adam, have to hold a workshop. But for instance, yesterday we had a workshop on value for value and with Fountain. And it was pretty good. So excellent. Workshops and this kind of live event that then we can send as recordings, they help a lot uptaking of features. So we didn't do anything yet because we launched it less than 1 month ago. Oh, I guess.
Just getting started. Yeah.
Yes.
I think it's so important that to me, live is one of the most important things about podcasting 2.0, even if not a whole lot of people use it right now, because it shows that RSS can be just as powerful of a distribution mechanism as YouTube or anything else. It puts RSS on par with every other proprietary platform.
Right. I just feel strongly about that. Keeps them from capturing, maybe is a better way to look at it, at least from our perspective. What we don't want is people capturing or closed companies capturing aspects of podcasting that could have been open had we moved faster. So that's one of the reasons why we definitely went after Lit. I mean, we do see so much value potential in doing this. Listen, early days, you're right. It's early days. We still have more features to roll out associated with this product. Getting our RMTP server definitely is going to be one of those key moments where we feel like we turn things up a little bit. Certainly in the works. I don't want to say soon, but it'll be, the next step.
How's business in general, if you don't mind sharing? What are you seeing? Are you seeing churn? Are you seeing new people coming in? What's the general overview?
Well, so, I mean, we have to acknowledge that COVID was the best thing that happened to podcasting, not only us, but to the
more
entire...
COVID, bird flu.
Come on, bird flu.
Dengue fever.
But so definitely that was unprecedented growth. But the whole concept of podcasting is still, in its growth phase. We're still continuing to see a lot of uptake. International, here in the US. We as a company are very happy with how we're doing. We continue to grow. We continue to do the best we can to attract new users, keep those that are around. Certainly it's good to be us, because we feel like we're doing a really good job at satisfying what demand is out there.
What do you think of some of the new medium types that we, slowly, very, very slowly are starting to drip in? Audiobooks, courses, stuff like that. I don't know if you provide for any different medium types. What are your thoughts on that?
Not yet, but early on, I remember coming to Alberto in a meeting saying, man, we just, let's do audiobooks. Those are so great. Like, I love a good audiobook. And so we've looked at that, having the medium tag that would designate that and allow for a better UI, I think is fantastic. Is it in our roadmap now? No, no matter how excited I get about something, Alberto's really good at keeping the course really straight and true.
There was a moment in which with Ben, we thought we should just launch music. We should just adopt and accept music as well as a format. But then when you step back, we actually had a brainstorming with our product person and our designer. We sat down, and really it meant changing the main workflow that onboards our users prior to them, signing up for a plan. It's an important step. And plus music, for instance, could have... complications in different jurisdictions, especially foreign jurisdictions. So Ben was much more excited than me, because I was already thinking about the issues. That's the problem. My problem is when Ben comes with these ideas, they are great, but then I already think, okay, I'm going to change the funnel, we're going to lose users. So I let's say sometimes he's top to down and I'm bottom up. So... But I would love
in the US we call you a Debbie Downer.
Debbie Downer.
I thought it was party pooper,
party pooper.
Listen, I don't want anybody to get the impression that Alberto is one of those typical type of tech guys that looks for a reason not to do something. he's 100% on board, and he doesn't temper my enthusiasm until he's spoken with the team, until he's really gathered all the inputs. And at least half the time, if not more, he's like, yep, doable. This is how we're going to do it. It's going to be awesome. And he takes the reins and goes. So certainly he does add a large dose of reality to my sort of, you know, field of dreams, but he doesn't quash any dreams for sure.
Yeah, I would say I haven't coded really for a while, for a long while, because we have everyone in the team is much better than me. So, you know, but the problem of, I think that I'm a builder at heart. So whatever we talk about, it's good from the strategy standpoint. But when you then put it down and you think, okay, what's the next step? That's a reality check. And that's my role sometimes between Ben and I.
Yeah, there's always that tension between when you're a developer or a builder or a coder, and you want to build things, but then there's a tension with is it realistic? Like, what's step two? How do we connect this to the thing that we're already doing? Like, there's all these things that temper the excitement.
Oh, we understand that relationship, Dave, very well.
Adam's like, let's do it. You know, I'm like, oh, okay. Whoa, 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 whoa.
No, 9 times out of 10, Dave goes, okay.
What I do, when this happens, I add a card, a task in the backlog that now is going to be completed in 2029 at this pace. So I tell Ben, yeah, we put it in the backlog. We're going to get back to that.
It's in the backlog.
Yeah.
So that's how Adam ended up 10 years in the future, is his backlog. Is
that's
about
right.
10 years.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right.
The to-do list. Yes. It's on the magical to-do list.
Yeah. I mean, I literally had a podcast network that I should have been able to sell to Spotify, but I was exactly 10 years too early.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. You're in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Just wait till Coca-Cola and all the rest of the advertisers get hold of your mints idea and they start paying listeners in Satoshis to not skip the ads. It's going to be one of those things that'll happen.
That's a very that's a very interesting point.
What did you think about? So I read Adweek had a thing, had an article this week about Time Magazine dropping their paywall. And this whole idea, the whole podcasting relationship to advertising in relation to the broader market. I know, Ben, you're a business guy. You love economics and business stuff. And I just wonder, like, I think what we saw with Spotify's with their earnings when they're finally turned profitable was that it was very clear that they just make so much more money off subscribers than they do off advertising. Advertising is a very small part of their overall revenue. And like, I was reading this article about Time Magazine and it dropping their paywall. And it said, this quote stuck out to me. It said, the Time model cannot be easily replicated. It has the benefit of billionaire ownership, which provides a financial buffer that few others enjoy. It also has more than a century of accrued brand equity, which has enabled it to branch into lines of business like events, franchises and awards, which draw much of their appeal from the authority of its logo. Mm. And I just thought, like, because it said that they dropped their paywall model and tried to beef up advertising, but advertising has really only grown like 14%, so very low double digit.
Well, didn't the New York Times just announce they're going to put their podcast behind a paywall?
Yeah. And
that was in the news. Yeah.
Yeah. That seems to be like a dual strategy of, so it's like with the Daily, they're paywalling the archive, which nobody ever listens to anyway. And then with Serial, they're windowing. So they're doing an initial paywall for a few days and then releasing it, you know, out there. So New York Times is doing sort of the opposite of what Time is doing. They're going all in on their subscription paywall stuff. Time is opening it up. And it seems in both, to me, Time Magazine seems to be able to do that based on the fact that, like this thing said, they have billionaire ownership. They really don't have to have, their business is not threatened if they don't make their revenue targets. New York Times doesn't really have that luxury. So no, no.
New York Times is a bonanza because no one's paying for news; they're paying for Wordle.
Yeah,
literally, literally. It's funded. It's funded by Wordle. That's how the New York. Everyone knows it. It's the big joke in the news business.
Like, I know you don't do ad. You don't. You know, you're not an advertising focused hosting company. But I mean, do you have just thoughts on where the whole advertising model is right now?
Well, let me jump in and say that the revenue model really is or should be dictated by the cost structure. So if you're Time Magazine and you have, you know, 500 reporters across the world that you're paying salary and health benefits to, you're going to need a different cost structure, revenue sort of model than a little podcast hosting company like us. How they choose to pivot would have the benefit of the financial models that they can build that say, okay, look, this is what we know we can do in the market. And this is what we know, you know, based on our best projections, this attrition rate or what have you, the CPM model. And I think a lot of companies don't bother to do the math. They just kind of say, listen, we've been around for 80 years and, you know, revenue keeps declining. Let's try something new and spice it up and go and keep our revenue model the same. And, you know, how do we drive subscriptions? But I don't want to say that one is better than another. It just depends on where's the money going once it comes in and how fast does it go out. And each company is going to have a different sort of thing. So like the New York Times model, it's really cool in my mind that they're able to segment their buyers and maybe squeeze a little bit more money out of people that find a lot of benefit in being the first to know, you know, the next episode in Serial or go back and listen to the daily for whatever reason they would do that. And so each listener or each listener kind of segment is going to have different aspects and different values to the people creating the content. So I don't think there's a best that can be like a blanket. I think it's very unique to who have they attracted to use their product and how do those people prefer to pay. So some people may prefer to pay with their time and attention and not with their wallets. So they're going to be better for advertisers. Other people prefer not to pay with their time and attention. They prefer to pay with their wallets and get straight to the nut. So I think there's just different segments and it's smart as a business to look at those segments and say, how can we give them exactly what they want? And they can give us exactly what they need to. So it's a value for value model, but not in the good sense. It's more in just the, I'm sorry, Adam, to have like blasphemed that term, but, you know, it is kind of like, well, how are they wanting to return the value? And for some people it's time, and attention and not, a subscription.
Does RSS.com offer subscription solutions?
You mean like private podcasting?
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
We haven't gotten in that. I mean, it's on the road.
It's in the backlog.
It's in the backlog.
Is it backlog?
2029. Yeah. No, I mean, there's just no doubt that, and particularly in the economy we discussed earlier, multiple subscriptions is just is going to be very challenging, very competitive. Look at the streaming services.
Yeah.
It's very competitive, very hard to make it profitable.
And people try to bundle and it doesn't work typically. I mean, there's a lot of angst, I think, but again, it goes to me anyway, it goes like to the infrastructure supporting the money making business. And sometimes those people have built out too much. They're not nimble enough to limit their size or to you know, get new technologies that can allow them to do more with less. It's just, but that's what it's going to take in this economy for sure.
What I've noticed recently is we watch a lot of YouTube and, just different shows. And, the ad load on YouTube is just unbearable. It is just unbearable. Like they seem to be forcing, I don't know any other way to think about it other than they seem to be forcing you to go into a subscription because it is, I mean, people complain about the volume of ads on radio. if you add up the number of ads you're seeing on a typical 20 to 30 minutes of YouTube, Oh, it's just unwatchable almost. You're getting hit every time.
You added the right word right at the end of there, Dave. Almost. I mean, they have like to the millisecond determined what someone's tolerance level is. And they take you right up to that limit. So that's why you're still watching those YouTube videos but as a collective, I mean, not you in particular, but they do watch and they do understand like, oh, this person abandoned, like we did that too much. Let's dial it back a little bit. And they're so good at, I guess, extracting as much as they can for their own purposes. But they extract as much as they can without losing people.
It's so sick. I mean, because the mindset you have to go do something like that is how much can we annoy our audience?
Oh yeah.
And with that, but not so much that they leave.
It's we'll make them. Yeah.
It's awful. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't want that to happen. So then the sort of like the juxtaposition of that was, my wife listens to the Dana Gould Hour. He's a comedian podcast. And she sent me an episode of that. She's like, here, you'll like this. Some of this got to do with like the CIA and the stuff. So, she sent it to me and then I started listening to it and within the first minute, he's like, you know, we don't do ads. We're essentially value for value. Just go, you know, go take out a subscription. If you like the show, help us out. That way we stay ad free. Done. It was like 15 seconds. And then it's not a single ad in the rest of the show. And it was glorious. And I went and immediately gave the guy money. It was like, I feel like hello. I have to give
that's
you money.
How it works.
You
know? That's how it works. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Are you guys doing music hosting at all? Or is that also in the backlog?
It's not something we're targeting. I'm sure every podcast host out there hosts music without knowing they're hosting music.
Sure, sure. But
no, it's not. I mean, again, it's on the backlog. We would love to do what you guys have done and merge, you know, value for value and music. I think it is the future. I think it's the way to go. I think it's still early days and for us to put resources towards it is difficult. You know, our pet project is Mexico and that's where our resources go, kind of in that sort of, where can we just add dollars to see what happens? That definitely, like we mentioned before, I was so up on music. But the implementation and the kind of the day to day that takes over within the company kind of keeps us from doing
and,
that.
And remote items for people who want to add music to their podcast.
Yes, that can be done sooner than later. Music also had a compliance issue, meaning, for example, I'm based in Spain. You have to pay a license. So it's very unclear how to deal with it on an international level at the moment. It's something we want to do, but because we have so many things on our plate, it's really a matter of choosing the priority of what we are going to do. Like this month alone, in the past 30 days, we launched our UI for Lead. We launched Podroll, full support.
Nice.
And today we launched, for example, a major upgrade of our web player so that we can show podcasting 2.0 chapters.
Tell us about
that. Yeah, they're full screen. Ben, the idea was Ben's, so perhaps you want to...
Well, first of all, Ben, how did you get it out of the infamous backlog and get it into production?
Because it was easy enough.
Yeah, and it started a year ago. I mean, it's,
of course.
Oh, it's true. It was from last year, this idea. Yeah.
Yeah. So I just really, I mean, in listening to you guys and kind of envisioning what Todd Cochran calls super chapters, I could just envision so much more information dissemination via these chapters. And so I was telling Alberto, we've got to have a player that can do what we know super chapters can do. And so getting those in there, and making it so it can be like a slideshow, it can be like a good storytelling. The number of comedy skits that, you know, rely on one image or two images are pretty, you know, large. And so, I mean, I, the, just there's so many possibilities and it was just taking so long. I'm like, Alberto, let's implement this. We've got to eat our own dog food. The way that we do this is with improving the embedded player. So yeah, just released today.
So tell me about, because of course, I think it was Daniel J. Lewis who coined the term super chapters, and it may mean different things to different people. What is super chapters to you?
No, so yeah, they're the podcasting 2.0 chapters. I mean, just in putting it in a term, and maybe it was Daniel J. Lewis and not Todd. I give Todd a lot of credit for stuff that he probably never said or did.
May I?
I
interject here?
He's the guru. Yeah.
So I want to give you a Latin Latin class. Super. So in my opinion, that I called it. I saw the term super chapter being used in different contexts, like Superman, like, you know, great chapters, or, but really super comes from Latin, which means above. And the super chapters for me defines podcasting 2.0 chapters in that they are a JSON file that is on top of the audio and it's not embedded in the audio, which gives a lot of advantages. You don't have to update the audio file. Audio files are lighter, so compared to the ID3. So super chapter, in my own definition, is from Latin, above the chapter.
Okay, now that's I'll take it. I like it. Daniel J. Lewis won't like it, and Todd Cochran is scratching his head altogether. He's like, what? How did I get into this?
Where's an example? I'm trying to find an example. How do you find the super chapters?
The web player, you mean?
Yeah, the player. Yeah. Because I want
to. You have
see
to have
it.
A podcast. You can get started for free. No credit card required.
Yeah. Great. But where's the
Alberto has he's got an example podcast that we can send.
Oh, well, we bought a domain. It's called podcastinginnovation.com. Mm-hmm. It redirects to a podcast we host that we just launched. Very short episodes that we are going to use to illustrate possibilities of podcastings and mainly podcasting 2.0 features. So we just launched it to help our users understand really what it means. So yes, if you go to podcastinginnovation.com, first episode, you can just play full screen.
Okay, I'm looking at full
and it
screen.
Shines with desktop, whereas in mobile phones the experience is closer to modern podcast apps.
Yes,
but in desktop you have clickable links. You can use it in many ways. It's just a way. Hopefully we will see an uptake in the use of podcasting 2.0 chapters. That's our main goal.
I'm looking at it
right
now.
Yeah, I hope so too. I've been encouraged by podcast apps like Pocket Casting in adopting, getting on board with adopting some of these some of the features, because we got to be honest, when a big podcast app with that many users, when they put the feature in, it just like, right, it lifts all boats. So it's a big deal. It's been very encouraging to see that, and I see for them supporting chapters and Podping, and they've been talking about value for value for a long time and putting that in place. I mean, I feel like it's just going to make it's just going to make these things sort of standard, so they're not considered experimental anymore, because they're really not. I mean, some of these features are 4 years on, and they're just solid now. This is not beta stuff.
This looks nice, guys. I'm looking at the full screen web player. That's really pretty. It looks really pretty.
Yeah, it does It does look like a PowerPoint, like a slideshow.
Yeah,
and it still works.
First iteration. I was going to say the first iteration, it just wasn't enough slides. I'm like, I need more images, more chapters, more and more chapters. And they humored me, and Alberto, of course, agreed that it needed to really kind of fly.
Yeah, put some animated GIFs in there, man.
step up your
Dreb Scott goes crazy with that stuff. He's putting animated GIFs into stuff. Is flying around.
I do love the awesome art change when I listen here on a podcast. Who do I use? He's a Podverse is what I'm using nowadays, but yeah, it's great.
Oh, okay. Well, let's do an awesome change as we take a little, just play a song.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Now, remember, everybody, use a modern podcast app to boost the artists so that they feel the love. Let them know that you heard it on Podcasting 2.0. Pulled this one out of the Valueverse. This is Tim Ash. Had to let you go on Podcasting 2.0.
Started out just like the fairy tales and movies always said it should. Everything was picture perfect, no denying everything was good. But the winds of change blew in, and the doubt crept in again, and the seeds of love just wouldn't grow. I had to let you go. You go. Crazy how old memories can feel just like they happened yesterday. And how a song can take you back with just some words and the melody it plays. Even when you turn it off, that song, it just won't stop. Doesn't matter if it's fast or slow. I had to let you go. Story fades to black. No, there's no going back. Wouldn't trade it for the world, you know. Did I have to let you go?
Boost!
I had to let you go.
Probably let that go. Let her go. He's screaming out for it.
Oh, you gotta give him that huck and spit on that thing.
What was that? I don't know where that came from.
What was that?
I don't know what that was.
She was upset because he let her go.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't hear you come in with the saxophone on the second chorus.
Yeah, really? What's up, Alberto?
I thought about that. I'm not home. I'm in the office. I thought if I were home, I would just play something and see if Adam and Dave just, you know, activate my channel. I next time.
Hey, if you play something, we're playing it on the show. Guaranteed.
We know you got
recordings. We know you got it there. We know you have it, Alberto. Come on, man.
I do have an EP from the early 2000s. Yeah.
There you go.
Wait a second. Why has this not been known until now?
Get a value block. Put it on a feed. Come on.
I have to tell to my old band. Why not? They're still around, but they are in Italy now.
Oh, I think you would go to the top of podcastindex.top charts. Yes.
You'd be right at the top for sure.
He's the Duke Silver of hosting companies.
Oh, man.
So that, I think we're in a an interesting point where we're trying to get some of these tags, you know, so, over the finish line with phase seven. Phase seven has been sort of like, it's been really complicated for me trying to write a lot of this stuff up because it's confusing, and I've had to go back and forth and that kind of thing. But I feel like, you know, we said early on, a lot of the easy stuff was just what it is. I mean, it's easy. A lot of that stuff came quick, and now we're at the more complicated stuff where things are just not as, they don't happen as fast. Do you have any, like Alberto, do you have any tags or any features that you're, you know, really itching to see put into, to be official?
So phase seven, we are talking about publisher and chat, I guess.
Yeah. Or just anything. I mean, like, do you have anything that you're really waiting on or, you know, are really excited about that you think is not going fast enough?
Well, in my case, personally, it's something we didn't discuss directly with Ben, but the alternate enclosure is something that's been there forever. It's not phase seven, but I think it's not used enough. And one thing that intrigues me is the possibility of having lower quality files used by phones which have KaiOS and PodLP. We bought a KaiOS phone with Ben and tried to understand these emerging markets or more rural area worldwide. And this is something that's very interesting for me because it looks like a low-hanging fruit. And we don't even support it yet. We told Sam we would support it, so we have to. We committed. but really, so if you ask me all the tags, alternate enclosure is great. And I can imagine scenarios and use cases where there are multiple languages, you know, besides having lower quality lower size, so it's less data transfer. I can see multiple scenarios. It looks to me such a low-hanging fruit, Opus files. So I think that's where we should go next.
Now, the PodLP player is really great. I've had contact with the dev before. And I still have my flip phone that has PodLP. I would say the alternate enclosure, maybe this is just something we can end on, is there's a lot of confusion about YouTube URLs being used in the alternate enclosure. Anybody want to tackle that one?
Well, yes. This is interesting, Alberto, because you guys. If I'm not mistaken, you allow auto upload into YouTube. So you would have that code there to be able to pull that out and put into an alternate enclosure.
Absolutely. So I had this conversation with Sam Sethi, a couple of times.
Really long emails, probably. Very, very long emails.
Does he also write long emails to you?
Oh,
I just told
him,
like, oh, okay. Because I told Sam, I don't reply because I need to reply with a Loom video or with something. It's too many things and I don't know. And you know, now Gmail with the threads, it's not so easy to reply paragraph by paragraph like in the past. So no, it's a joke, but it's true. It's they're very good though.
We love you, Sam. A lot of content. No, we love Sam.
Yeah, I know. We do. We do.
We love his books.
So on the one hand, I love what TrueFans is doing. I'm a user of TrueFans. On the other hand, sometimes, so I love what Sam is doing, and I love that sometimes it doesn't wait and it just push it out and see what happens. And this was the case for alternate enclosure with the URL that doesn't have really a MIME type. And that's something I brought up. I mean, if that's the implementation, we can build it in 1 hour, right? But the whole point was, you know, this is not semantically correct if you think in strict terms. And that's what confuses me sometimes. I'm thinking, is it better to break a bit the rules at this stage or to just try to stick to the specs because we are in early stage and so we should figure out a way to improve those specs before it's too late. Another example, I just bring it up. The live the live item tag, you have the length in there, because the live item tag uses the canonical enclosure tag. It makes a lot of sense. I get it. But it doesn't make sense to have that attribute in there. You don't want the length because you don't know the duration specifically. But you have to do it. You add it. Otherwise, you know, if you don't add the length, it doesn't validate the RSS feed. We had this conversation in Mastodon. And really, people are putting 1, 2, 3. I told you our engineers, let's put 2018. It was our founding years. Like, it just doesn't make sense, you know. So on the one hand, it's okay to put YouTube URLs, but these are not an audio or a media file. They are URLs. So it's kind of a hack. So I wonder if it, so that's where I'm torn. That's what I'm saying. I appreciate a lot, but I'm afraid we already deviate from the standards before even having them at scale.
Well, it's not because the YouTube embed, Todd has been on a mission about this and I get it. I really haven't been able to focus on that very much because of these other things. But I think that so the question is it just a content link or is it an alternate enclosure? If you're talking about the YouTube embed code, and to me, it's more than just a link. It's not just a link. It's intended. It's there in the feed to be intended to be ingested by the podcast app in some way. So it's more than just a link. But then also, it's not enough to be considered an enclosure. So it's really, I feel like it is appropriate for it to be an alternate enclosure. But as long as we have, but we may need to make a modification to the spec to say that that alternate enclosure can be this other sort of thing. It can be something where you can say, okay, here's an alternate enclosure, which is a URI pointing to a thing that you as the app are going to have to go get and interpret somehow to do something special with it. Like I feel like that fits within alternate enclosure, but it's not just simply a MIME type issue, because it is a different sort of animal where you're saying, okay, the app is going to have to go and decode this thing into some other thing. I mean, that's the only way it makes sense to me. It's not, because it's more than just a link.
I agree. But one thing there is that then Sam Sethi did the right thing, because he prompted this conversation by kind of not breaking the rules, but kind of. And I think so we can say that whoever dares and tries something different within the community and is open about that, maybe that's a good thing to do. Maybe it starts this process. Because I agree with you, Dave, we should absolutely subsanate somehow that tag so that we take into account the YouTube user case.
Yeah. I think we can just tweak the specs a little bit. And Nathan already has a proposal in there to enhance the content link spec. And I think that's also valid, because you could see it as a link as well. I don't really care which way it goes, but I think you're right. I think between Todd and Sam, having the conversation is important, because it's not, we're probably going to run into stuff like this in the future as well. And I know like y'all, because I'm sure you would, if you had a way forward, you would probably, since you already know the YouTube ingestion, y'all would put it in there, but it's just, you have to know what to put in there.
Yeah. Shall we thank some people?
Oh, yeah, sure. Are we there yet?
Yeah, we're 148.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Time flies when you're with good friends. Hands across the border. Friends in Mexico. Wait, are you in Mexico? No, you're in Spain, aren't you?
Yeah.
Alberto, Spain. Where are you again in Spain?
Barcelona.
My daughter's in Barcelona right now.
I didn't know.
Yeah.
If she needs any recommendations or anything, just drop a line.
Well, thank you. That's highly appreciated. Or like a bat signal. She's in trouble. If she's in jail, will you get her out?
Absolutely. I would.
I love you, brother. Thank you.
We're doing a team meeting in Barcelona in a few weeks. Maybe she can join the team.
If she's around in 2 weeks?
No, she's only staying for 5 days. She's at Sagrada Familia today.
Very nice.
Which is just so, and you know, they're finishing that thing.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I was there. I went with my parents really 2 months ago because I hadn't gone since 2003.
Yeah.
And it's actually done. Yeah,
yeah, I know.
There is some.
Have you ever seen this, Dave? Sagrada Familia?
No, what is that?
That's the big church slash almost cathedral that Gaudi started, the artist Gaudi. Oh my! You've got to look it up. It's amazing. I went there with Tina.
Gosh! I'm looking at the. Oh my goodness! I'm looking at the photographs.
How long have they been building it, Alberto? Like 400 years?
No, but since the 60s, something like that.
I thought it was much longer than that.
No, Gaudi's a pretty recent.
Of course.
Actually, architect. You know what? Yeah. Actually, before maybe it's the 30s, the 40s. I'm bad because I was there 2 months ago with the audio guide, and I listened to the whole thing, and I already don't remember. But yes, I guess in the 60s, Gaudi died, and he died under a bus. I didn't know.
Yeah, I know. So he didn't die. He got hit by a bus.
Yes.
How much does that suck?
A tram. It's crazy.
Yeah, but even
a bad way to go.
But even in what's that little village that he built? I went to see that too. What's it called? The
Park Güell.
Yeah, man, it's amazing. His architecture was just phenomenal. Really, it's really cool. And it's I was also at the Familia Sagrada Familia in 2002.
20.
But I was there. I was there in 2002.
Weren't you in Sitges 2 years ago? You mentioned it on the show.
No, last year I was in Sitges. Yeah, okay, last year we went to.
And you didn't go to Sagrada Familia?
Yeah, no, we did. And that's what I said. We did. We also went to Familia Torres. I don't remember much after that.
Cantina to drink wine. That's good.
We did the whole. We did. we went to the cantina. Hey. You remind me of the song Speedy Gonzales.
That's my prosody.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's good. No, it's beautiful. Barcelona is beautiful. I recommend anybody, if you can, go to Barcelona. It's beautiful. Let's thank a few boosters. We have Boobery 6969. Boobery says, the next steps for GIFs involves building miniature live action sets that are boost reactive. Film that, then impose GIF puppets over the top of the set like Nick the Rat does. One part lit podcasting, one part South Park styled animations, one part Wayne's World. Whoa. Send me a link to see that.
I got no idea what that is.
It's some crazy work. This is when you unleash it on people, this is what happens. I got to check out what Nick the Rat is doing. BR sends 1,000 sats. Hooktaw, he says. That's right. I slipped it in there. You guys don't know what that is, but it's a viral sensation. Cole McCormick, 2222, row of ducks. These board meetings are powerful. Go podcasting. We will. Spurious Tom. Do we know Spurious Tom?
I've never seen that.
Well, moniker. Spurious Tom. You've been defragmented. Welcome to the family, 777. That's what hit the harp earlier. Loving the live podcast, he says. 1,000 sats from Sam Sethi. I guess he figured out how to refresh and got our live stream. He says, this is regarding eCash. We are doing something similar in True Fans with virtual wallets and the W3C web payment standard. They got to go look at that now.
Web payment. Does he mean like web monetization?
Let's see. He's got a URL, which is w3.org/payment/WG. Let me see what this is. Oh, forbidden. Why am I seeing this? Your access to the site was blocked by WordFence.
Oh, that's okay. Web payments overview.
I got cock blocked over here. Let me see if I do it over here. Here we go. Web payments, March 2020. The working group.
Okay, so it's not a actual standard yet.
Not yet. They're working on it. Yeah. Okay. Back to our boost. Chris LA is 10,000. 10,000 sats. Heck yes. Very stoked you guys are looking into this eCash stuff. I've been thinking for months this could be a better experience for listeners and podcasters. Definitely down to help test this with the Jupiter Broadcasting Show. He said that should be shows, probably. Definitely. Chris? Well, that's the beauty of the value block, is you can put any kind of payment mechanism in there. So I guess if we just add it and it says, hey, this, we just have to figure out how to transport it. But I'm glad you're all in, buddy. I'm glad you're in. We need that help. Now, Gene Everett, 3333, he says eCash is trash, unfortunately. So there's the other side of the coin. He doesn't say why, but I'd love to know why it's trash.
Well, so, it rhymes, and so that's all you need.
Clearly, it is. It's true.
1776 from Salty Cray on Howdy Boardroom. You know the economy is trash when Hooters has to close 333 locations. Magic number. Good thing my node is running 24/7. The sweet sound of Satoshis, thanks to our producers in the 2.0-verse. Go podcasting.
Nope.
Then we have that 169.691 from Booberry, and I will mention again, it's the satellite skirmish. It's lit in the app on Sunday at 4 Central. Stephen B. and Eric PP have transformed the split kit into something magical. Check it out at liveislit.com. And then 100 sats from Sam. Just let us know he couldn't hear the show, but we fixed that. Let me see. 100 sats from Nunny of Business, who just says, hey, back at you. Jeremy 15, 333 ITM. Oh, that's for, sorry. I should have skipped over that one. And then I'm at the delimiter.
We have zero PayPals for the week.
Yay! But- value for value, everybody.
The biggest mistake you guys made was saying how much you had in the bank. Alberto and I are like, well, okay, they're well enough funded. We don't need to send anything anymore.
Transparency for the loss. Yes.
For the loss.
Yeah.
Hey, but we'll fund your trips. I mean, you guys go meet up, give each other back rubs on the beach. We'll fund that.
Point of note, be less transparent. Okay. Gotcha.
Right. How much are we paying a month, Dave?
To the hosting?
Yeah. What are our total costs?
$720.
It's about $1,200 a month, I'd say, with the voltage node.
Yeah. $720 okay. for the Linode. It's $150 for the voltage.
Yeah, so we'll be out of money in 2 years. All right, keep it up, guys. Keep it up.
We'll be sure to
don't send this any value. I understand. That's right. Maybe we just shouldn't do the show. Just ride it out, Dave. Ride it out. Yeah, sunset. No problem.
But somebody did send us something. Hey, citizen, send us 6969. Please, Adam's new album, plus, we need this.
I don't think so. By the way, it turns out that song was 100% AI.
No, was it for real?
Yeah, that was for real. But it was all AI from Richard, what was it?
Greaser?
Greaser, yeah. He was all jitty about it being played on the podcast.
Well, if you're going to release your album, then... Alberto has to release his album. It's only fair.
Okay.
I want to boost Alberto's album. I'm just saying that would be a highlight of my week.
Why? They've got enough money, Dave. You don't need to boost them for anything.
Oh yeah, that's right.
They've got enough money.
I take it back.
They're swimming. They're swimming in money over there. Yeah, they're doing just fine. They're doing just
you
fine.
Get one set.
What split? Kyron. They don't need a split. They don't need to be in a split.
Kyron from the Mill Morals Podcast. Satchel Richards 1111. He says, "Hook me up with that fat pipe." Okay,
done.
Let's see who we got. We got the delimiter from last week. Oh, I messed up because I had we were Saturday last week.
Oh,
what was the date from what was last Saturday?
The 22nd.
Mm-hmm. Was that the 22nd? Okay.
By the way, you guys didn't send me a wallet to put in the split.
Oh, we forgot. It's okay.
No, I want you to feel good. I want you to feel good about us sending you money.
Heaping burning coals on your head is what is this.
There you go. Yes, that's exactly how it works.
The 22nd was Saturday. How am I going to get through this? 23rd. Here we are. 23rd. All right. Auto open a channel, but I still have concerns about what happens when the node receives more than the opening 50,000 sats. This is from user 3490802.
Okay.
2100 sats. He He says, I don't want a payment to fail if, say, Dreb Scott boosts an artist 100,000 sats for a killer song. We would also need to be sure that there's auto increase on the channel balance when the payments start coming in. We've seen payments fail for many reasons for artists, and that is not a good experience. See, this, he's right, and this is, or he or she is right, and this is the reason why I think a mint model makes a lot of sense. So, yeah. I mean, all,
no more all you have payments.
To do, yeah, you just have to make sure that you have plenty of funding on the back end. I mean, like, that's...
Well, it, you know, if, you, as long as someone funds, as long as you don't touch the funding is always there.
Right. And so you just, all you're just doing is making sure you're no longer doing channel management. You're just making sure the number is sufficient.
Right. You
know? Anyway, the, let's see, Chad F 3333 through Fountain. He says, my biggest takeaway from this, meaning last week's show, was ROI. This stuff isn't free to run and it's not free to operate. It's true.
That's right. Trying to fix it. Trying to fix it.
Genonymous 1,700 sats. Through Fountain, he says, hub liquidity. I'm greasing the skids a bit at a time.
Thank you.
From Anonymous, 5,000 sats through Podverse, he says, sounds unavoidable that making V4V caveman easy will require some sort of KYC. If so, should we focus less on the Albi LSP stuff and instead have podcast apps try integrating with Lightning-enabled exchanges like River or Cash App? It feels like we're letting self-sovereign goals get in the way of onboarding listeners. It was drinkers, not moonshiners, who ended prohibition.
Good point. Mm-hmm. And this solution that we're looking at actually does both. You can be sovereign or you can be custodial.
Yeah, and the Lightning side of things is not going away. I mean, it's always going to be there. It's just whatever the podcaster wants to do. That's just the way that works. I mean, the Lightning podcast value block will continue to function just like it always has if that's what people want. Boomy from Albi, 5,100 sats, says channels opening are the KYC process for the self-sovereign person.
Yeah, I think we read that one live.
Yep. See, Brown of London, ancient computers ranged in the long caves deep in the bowels of the planet. Tick away the dark millennia and the ages hang heavy on their dusty data banks. Google's polling computers. That's, did we read? I think we read that one too.
Yeah, I think this so. Yeah, I think we did.
But that's on the, but the date on this is the 23rd. How is that even possible?
He's in a different time zone.
Oh, this is from the source.
Yes. It's from the Holy Land.
Oh, this is confusing me. Podhome, 8,000 sats. Through Podcast Guru, says, hey guys, so far Medium equals course and audiobook just tell apps what it is so that the apps can, for instance, display episodes oldest to newest if that's not set in the feed and maybe change episode to lecture and so on.
Yeah.
I think it would be great to set some guidelines for mediums in the namespace spec just to help apps interpret them the same. So I think he's right because we were talking about what does course do.
Yeah, I think we talked about that. We just need more examples, right? Which we have. We said he has the one example.
Yeah.
We have one example already. Yeah. So let's follow the leader.
Like with RSS, like with what y'all are doing with the embedded chapters in the player, you sort of like a presentation style. I could see that. I mean, I could see that player being a sort of like course experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very much so. Yeah. Very much so.
Yeah. Like one of those online academy type things. That would be pretty rocking. Once told Kyle 2222 through Podcast Guru says, missed you guys. Glad you're ready to ride the Lightning again. Barry at Podhome came through 6,100 sats again. He says, also my audio courses are free. Courses and audiobooks can be paid products. True Fans, of course, has a feature for that. That's good.
True Fans has implemented everything.
Yeah, they have a feature for everything.
Sam just put on LinkedIn that they support live events 20 minutes ago.
Oh.
Oh, nice. Really?
That's another thing we gotta look at.
Oh, this, let's see.
Live events with...
meaning tickets.
Tickets, yeah, ticketing. Yes. Yeah.
Comic strip blogger. Oh, it's Delimiter. Comic strip blogger, 25,000 sats through Fountain. Says, howdy, fellow meatbags, Adam and Dave.
Meatbags? All right.
Singularity is near. So I'm launching soon weekly comic strip about AI singularity at www.singularity.express. But in meantime, I invite your audience to visit my daily cartoons at www.csb.lol. Yo, CSB.
Thank you, CSB. I'm glad when he. I'm always smiling when he shows up. It's always lovely. See. Monthlies?
Yeah, and that's from. We got some monthlies. See, we got Jordan Dunville, $10.
Thank you,
Jordan. Michael Kimmerer, $5.33. Dreb Scott, Bruce Wayne of Podcasting, $15. And Pedro Goncalves, $5.
Well, Dave, I think we should just empty out the bank account. You and I should go on a little vacation. Go look at that.
Vacay.
Yeah, go look at Barcelona. Yeah.
So I took advantage of the little interlude here, and we smashed that like button on the podcastindex.org and made a little donation for you guys.
We shamed him into it, Dave. Beautiful.
All right, I'm checking it. Look who's Adam.
Oh, yes, Dave.
Ben and Alberto from RSS.com sent us $1,200.
Wow. Shot caller. 20 inch blaze on the Impala.
You should have told us that the monthly expenses was $20,000.
We're dying over here. We're getting killed.
A reminder that Adam and Dave take nothing out of this venture. Yes. We leave everything on the node, everything in the bank account. And we appreciate your support monetarily, but that you're in the game, that you're doing it. It's always a delight to have you guys on. Even though Alberto is a tech guy, he's very, very sunshiny.
He's the best.
He's always upbeat, always exciting. It's you guys are great. You really are. And I hope I keep sending enough customers your way. I'll try and send you the big guys. One other thing I'm sorry?
Yeah, Adam, sorry. Just anytime anybody from the Austin area comes into the podcast transfer portal, I tell them it's direct from you. I don't ever confirm that with you, but I always tell the team, hey, VIP treatment for this guy. This guy's definitely coming from Adam.
There's some
yesterday.
Yes.
We had to spin up new machines to import a podcast from Austin. With 5,000 episodes.
Wow.
And we imported it. We did.
Well, I'm glad I sent that person to you. I can't remember who it was.
Oh, you did?
Sure, it came from me.
I'm sure it did, yeah.
Todd did something really nice, which I thought was just lovely. I'll use that word. I've talked about that podcast device that this guy Fernando makes, the Audio Sigma.
Yeah.
Which is, and I have no commercial interest or anything otherwise in that, other than I wish this is what I tried to build in 2015. No, before that, 2014, maybe.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
The price is great. It's a great device. It's Podfather approved. You can do live shows with it. And I think Todd is making him a partner or something so they can offer that to their customers. It's just beautiful. Do you guys offer any gear advice to your customers?
No. In fact, I was going to ask you if we can buy some of your gear, because we've got to send it down to Mexico. We're opening up our studio down there, and they keep saying, hey, we need this piece of equipment and that piece of equipment.
You should take a look at this. Yeah, at Audio Sigma. I think is it audiosigma.com?
.com, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
It's
definitely
it's,
interested.
It's really Pod Mobile. That's what it's called.
I saw that last week when you mentioned it. I was walking in Barcelona, close to the Sagrada Familia, and you were speaking, and so I had time to look at it. It's very nice. And you said that you could also give it to your own users, meaning as we could give to our users. It's not a bad idea with some plans or some special workshop. That's not a bad idea at all, actually.
And, they have the. He has the single microphone version, which is, what is it called? Let me see. It's the Mic Hero. And these things are amazing because you can plug it right into your phone and it powers from the phone. And then the phone immediately recognizes it as a device that you can use. And the two mic version has an expansion port. So you can hook up another one. So if you had more people or, more mics needed, you can connect them. I like this guy because he came from Brazil with $100 in his pocket to America. Mm. He's just grinding away, cool. And he orders like 50 at a time to be made. So he's I just want to make sure he's highlighted in our world, because I tried to build this and I failed. I failed on price. I failed on everything. It's very hard to do, but it's a great. I think Dame Jennifer bought one when she was thinking about it. So
nice.
It's really
good. Well, put his wallet in for our split today.
You guys. Thank you, Ben and Alberto from RSS.com. You guys rock.
Yeah, really, thanks, guys.
Really appreciate all that you do. And have yourselves a great weekend.
Thank you.
All right.
You too.
All right. Brother Dave.
Yes, sir.
Have a great weekend.
You too, man.
All right. And I'd like to say...
PSA. You know, I'm going to be gone next two shows. You know, I'm going to be... I'm flying out next Friday.
Oh,
do we
want
to try to do something before I leave or what?
You mean like a Thursday night type thing?
Yeah. I don't know. We can try something.
I'd hate to have two board meetings gone in a row. Let's see what we can do. I mean, everybody,
right, we'll figure something out.
Everybody deserves vacation. Even you, Dave Jones.
No, I don't deserve it.
We'll let you know. We'll advertise it. We'll broadcast it. Thank you, Boardroom. Thank you for being here. We'll see you very soon on Podcasting 2.0.
You have been listening to Podcasting 2.0. Visit podcastindex.org for more information.
Go podcasting!
Now that's hot.